Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the second hour of our Great Big Monday show here at Catholic Answers Live. Today, physicists, biologists, neuroscientists, and comedians seem to be the main proponents of an atheistic worldview. I have no idea why the comedians would be so susceptible to atheism, but it's pretty clear why the scientists are. They probably have an exaggerated sense of science as an explanatory tool, as a thing that can explain things. They have the sense that, oh, well, everything can be explained scientifically, and nothing that's not science explains anything, really. And a good deal of this can probably be explained further by the specialization of our academies, of our universities, where students have to specialize very early in their careers in order to advance to PhDs and all that kind of thing. And many great scientists, I suppose, at least this is my theory, end up barely conversant in philosophy. And there's no shortcut to it. Philosophy is really, really hard, just like physics is really hard, or biology is really hard, or being a comedian is really hard. It would be wonderful if we could have a both entertaining and compelling and somewhat, not necessarily completely, but somewhat comprehensive explanation for Thomas Aquinas' ways to reasoning about God and God's existence. We need a way to make it easier for the scientists and the comedians to understand these. Robert Delfino is our guest this hour. He's an associate professor of philosophy at St. John's University in New York, and he's the author with Matt Frad of Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas, out now from En Route Books and Root Books, either way you want to pronounce it. And if you're scared of philosophy and you don't think you can do it, you'll be relieved to know that this is a fun and manageable read. Dr. Delfino, thanks for being with us.
Hey, great to be with you, Si. I hope it's a fun and intelligible read. I think you enjoyed it.
I did, really. I really actually did. I don't know what's wrong with comedians. I don't know why we're having all these comedians doing atheistic comedy now. But scientists, it seems almost like sometimes we hear from these scientists, like a scientist who you actually mentioned in the book, who I feel like hitting my forehead with my palm, who has argued that modern physics can explain how something came from nothing. But it's not really nothing, but nonetheless, he feels satisfied enough that this to say there's clearly no God because of this. That seems to me that what's lacking there is not science, but a basic understanding of philosophy and philosophical terms.
That's a good point, Si. It's kind of crazy. The academy has in some ways been crumbling intellectually for a long time. On the one hand, you have people who think the only way to knowledge is through the empirical sciences. Then you have postmodernists who say we can't know anything or it's all socially constructed. People over-specialize now in academia, so some of them just know about, traditions in 16th century Spain or something like that. So it's very hard for people to have a dialogue where, members of different disciplines can talk about these deep questions, philosophy intersecting with science and all that. It's hard, it's difficult right
yeah.
now.
Right. But it seems almost like the harder the topic is, when it comes to God, the greater the certainty, like that we express this certainty, absolutely no God or absolutely there's a God, because we're just not certain. And maybe we give it the air of certainty by the greater our bravado, the more sure we can make ourselves feel about our own position.
Well, I think, I can't really paraphrase Nietzsche because I try not to read him too often. He spent the last 12 years of his life in an insane asylum.
Wait a second. You're not a Nietzschean. Is that what you're saying?
Of course not.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I hear all these Christians saying, oh, Nietzsche's better than you think. No, he's not. He's a madman and an anti-Christian. Why are we pretending like Leopold and Loeb read Nietzsche and they understood him? So I'm sorry. I know it was a complete tangent, but I just don't get the modern Christian love affair with Nietzsche.
No, that's fine. But my point is that even Nietzsche himself lamented the loss of God. And I think there's some of that going on now. For example, why is Jordan Peterson so popular? I'm just going to do my own little segue. I think part of it is because, we have all this technology. We have all these video games. We have phones. We have you know, all ways to indulge our pleasures, and we have governments that give us welfare and things like that. But there's no meaning in all of this, right?
Yes,
there's something
right.
missing from it all.
Right.
And that's why I don't think you can really fully get away from the God question, although you can, through copious drinking and video game playing, distract yourself away from it for a time, but not forever.
No, it does seem that someone could probably make a chart that would show the rise of entertainment culture and the ability to entertain ourselves constantly, 24 hours a day, accompanied by the rise of irreligion, not necessarily atheism, which can be an honorable and position for someone. Not a correct position, but an honorable mistake to make. But the irreligion seems to be connected to exactly what you just mentioned, distraction. We don't have the ability to sit and think.
Well, let's face it, we're also spoiled, right?
Yeah.
In the old days, you had to work hard to save enough food for the winter so you wouldn't die.
Yeah.
You had to call on God a lot. Now, you know, you go to Walmart or, you collect a check from the government. So it's – It can prevent you from having that desperate need to turn to God.
Right. But nonetheless, people do. I mean, there is a felt need, if we will allow ourselves to have our own feelings, to know final answers and to have some – to come to some understanding. And now we have this great mind in Thomas Aquinas who proposes most probably with the greatest elaboration and the clearest elaboration – many people have attempted either to prove the existence of God or at least to show that it's possible to prove the existence of God. But Thomas gives us these five ways, and they really are an extraordinary achievement in human history and often neglected.
That's true. I mean, philosophy itself has taken a hammering from people like David Hume, who questions causality and who says that all of our knowledge has to be tied to the empirical world, hence giving kind of a preference to the natural sciences. And then Kant comes along, and after 2,000 years of a realist philosophical tradition built on common sense, suddenly Immanuel Kant, the great German philosopher, says, well, we can't really know anything about the world outside of our mind. And as a result, philosophy in a way becomes ridiculed now.
Yeah.
We look to the sciences, not to philosophy, but I think we need both.
So in the book, you and Matt Frad, you take a Socratic approach to Thomas Aquinas, which I thought was brilliant. First of all, I thought it was very wise to just have a simple question as the title of the book, does God exist? Because that seems to me a baseline question that the whole society is more or less struggling over, whether in our moral struggles or how we want the world to be organized, or sometimes just openly discussing these or deriding one another on Twitter. That's another big one. But does God exist is a fair question. And I think everybody has it to some degree or another if they allow themselves to have it. And the Socratic dialogue is very digestible. You have these two characters who will go back and forth about with questions and answers. And they seem like real people. You made cool characters. And you can just go back and forth with them.
Okay, first, I got to give some mad props here to my co-author, Matt Frad.
Please don't.
First of all,
okay.
First of all, I believe he came up with the title, but even if that isn't the case, he definitely had the idea for a dialogue.
Okay.
Now, it so happens that before I met him, I used to use short little dialogues, like 2 or 3 pages as writing assignments in some of my philosophy classes. So it was somewhat natural for me to jump in and help him write some more of these dialogues. The hard part was making AJ and Lucy actually feel like believable characters because he's writing like half the dialogue and I'm writing half the dialogue. I don't know. Do you think we succeeded on that end?
I do. Yeah. Right. So that would suggest to me that you probably were behind the character of Lucy and he was behind the character of AJ.
And no, we actually did both.
Oh, you did
together.
Both. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. But
I guess we succeeded in that way.
Well, so let's take one of the chapters is about the third way. It's the of the five ways, as I told you before we came on the air, it's the easiest one for me to understand. I imagine that people with different styles of learning and different configurations of how their psyche works would find different ways more or less convincing. But it strikes me as it's the most powerful one. And it's the argument that some things don't have to be. As a matter of fact, most things don't have to be. They don't have to exist. There's no necessity. But from all these things that don't have to be, we can argue to something or someone that does have to be, that has what we might call necessary being. And so, and you have it in the book as possible being or necessary being, but sometimes also you use, I think, the old fashioned word contingent being and necessary being.
That's right.
But it's what I liked about it, just if I may say, about the way the dialogue works is AJ is questioning Lucy, and as Lucy's explaining things, and I think if you just got a philosophy book, you'd be reading along, and then in your own mind would come up this AJ question, which would be like, well, why can't matter just be the necessary being? Okay, that about the same moment that it occurred to AJ, it also occurred to me. So I don't know if AJ is really a dumb character or if I'm super smart or what, but then you have to address. So the dialogue does a nice thing of, because it is true that when you engage with a philosophical text, you are in dialogue with it, and you roll your eyes at some part and go, well, that's not true. Like, you could just have matter be the necessary being. And, but then that gives Lucy, the Lucy character, a chance to explain why the necessary being has to be different than what she is, what AJ is conceiving of. I realize I'm monopolizing your time. I have to give out the phone number and take a quick break, if you don't mind. But I very much enjoyed the book, Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue in the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. I think our readers will. And when we come back, we're going to prove that God exists. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. If you'd like to talk with philosopher Dr. Delfino, Robert Delfino from St. John's University in New York, 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Summer is upon us, and though the temperatures are going up, the prices are coming down during Catholic Answers' first ever summer book sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. For a limited time, dozens of great books are available for $10, $5, even as low as $1 a copy. This is the time to load up on solid Catholic books for you, your friends, and your family. The spectacular online event offers savings of 50% and more on books by Jimmy Akin, Tim Staples, Rod Bennett, Gary Machuda, and a whole host of esteemed authors, evangelists, and apologists. We've even got all of the books in our Catholic Answers Classics series marked down. Log on now to shop.catholic.com and take advantage of what will be one of the most exciting sales of the summer. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers. Log on to shop.catholic.com and start saving today.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Atheists claim they don't need God to be a good person, implying God's not relevant to morality. But is this true? Well, atheists can be good in the sense of knowing behaviors that respect the goods of human nature and living accordingly. St. Paul acknowledges this natural moral law in Romans chapter 2. But this doesn't mean God is irrelevant when it comes to morality. And here's the reason. Besides God's grace being necessary to live the moral law perfectly and merit heaven, God is necessary for the law to be morally binding. How can the moral law be binding if there's no moral lawgiver behind it that surpasses human authority? The answer is, it can't. So, an atheist can follow the natural moral law, but only the theist is consistent in saying that such a law is morally obligatory. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Matt Frad and philosopher Dr. Robert Delfino have a brand new book out from,
En Route Books and Media.
En Route Books and Media. I'm sorry, I blanked. The book's called Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. If you'd like to talk with Dr. Delfino, 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884.
So I'm really interested in hearing your little summation of the third way. I want to see if I did a good job here and you could like extract a little.
Okay, so I don't think that I can explain any of Aquinas's five ways at all. But I feel like I can if the closest I could come would be whatever I can do on the third way, which is that God, no, well, no, a necessary being must exist for there to be any being at all. And that necessary being we call God. And that can be argued this way, that there's nothing necessary about me in the philosophical sense. That there is a time when I didn't exist, and there will be a time in the future when I will pass away and back to dust I go. Okay.
Now, believe it or not, the key is to focus on, I would say, your coming into existence.
Yeah. Okay.
Because actually, if you focus on the passing away, that gets complicated. But I like to say it this way. If my parents didn't meet, I wouldn't exist. I mean, it's just the way it goes.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay. So so that means that I am not a necessary being. If I needed two causes, my mother and my father, for me to exist, I'm not a necessary being. And that can't go back infinitely back because...
Well, the way to think about it is a thought experiment.
I love how you're letting me explain this by fixing it for me every time I speak. Go ahead. Keep going. I like it.
An Italian professor of philosophy in New York is going to do this.
Right. Yeah, you're completely right, Cy, but here's the better way to explain it. Okay, go ahead.
So you're a possible being. We've established that because you didn't need to exist, right?
Right.
I'm a possible being. Now, the question is, can everything in the universe, every piece of dust, every particle, everything, be a possible being? And the answer is no. Because a possible being, right, always is dependent on a cause external to it, right? Like you on your parents and things like that.
Right.
But if everything in the universe is a possible being, it's always pointing to something outside of it. So we never get that first cause to explain why anything exists at all. In other words, it can't be that everything in the universe is a possible being. There has to be a necessary being. That's the first stage of the third way. Do you want to take it from here?
Yeah, because I'm obviously clearly such a brilliant philosopher. Okay, so again, if you deride my understanding of Thomas Aquinas' third way, you have to understand you're the one who explained it to me. So that you have to take the blame.
Passing the buck here. You didn't study hard enough.
Oh, no, I'm shy. Clearly, I didn't study hard enough. Okay, so if we look at the whole sum total of things and say they can't all be merely possible, at least one has to be necessary, then I'm okay so far?
So far.
Okay, so now you take it from there then.
Okay, so there has to be a necessary being. Otherwise, we couldn't explain how any of these possible beings, which we see around us, came into existence. Now, the question is there's two ways for a being to be necessary. It can be necessary through another, and I'll get to that in a moment with the analogy of the sun, or it can be necessary through itself. So what's the difference? All right, it's time for another thought experiment. This is what we do in New York. We eat pizza, drink coffee, and do thought experiments. So imagine if the sun, you know, the great ball of fire that gives us light. I hope nobody calls in to say it's not a great ball of fire because that wasn't literal. But the sun, imagine if the sun always existed and always will exist. It will never explode, right?
Yes.
It would be a necessary being. And of course, if the sun is a necessary being, its light is always coming out of it. So light is a necessary being. But notice the distinction. The light is still dependent on the sun. If you could somehow destroy the sun, the light would go away. So light is a necessary being through another in this analogy. Right. So the first stage of the third way, there has to be a necessary being, but then we're not sure. Is it necessary through another or is it necessary through itself? Well, they can't all be necessary through another because then we have the same problem. Something is dependent on something else, depending on something else. And that can't go on infinitely. There has to be something that's necessary in itself or per se, as Thomas says in the Latin. And that now would be God. Now, we need a little more finessing because Thomas is going to give some other arguments. In fact, he does this right after in the Summa Theologiae, the next question, question 3, article 4, he says that, you know, it has to be, basically it has to be being itself. The way he expresses it is that the necessary per se being can't have a distinction between what it is and that it is, or its essence and existence. No, it has to be existence itself. And then he'll go on later on to talk more about that. But this is very close to God in the Jewish and Christian tradition, the great I Am. You know, I am who I am, the sacred tetragrammaton and all that. So.
Right. And Thomas he's not the inventor of this argument or maybe even arguments.
No, a lot of them come from Aristotle. The third way in particular comes from the great Islamic thinker Ibn Sina. But Thomas makes some modifications to these things. Thomas's notion of what being and existence mean, if you will, are different from what Ibn Sina seems to have meant. So there are some, you know, refinements.
Yeah. So, but what I like about it is that Aristotle is pre-Christian and not even probably aware of the existence of Jews. So you can't say that these arguments, oh, this is just the product of Christians trying to prove. When someone just as Aristotle did, tries to be fully reasonable in his thinking, he can come to have a completely separate from Judeo-Christian tradition, including Islam, an understanding that, yes, there must be this being God.
Absolutely. Among the ancient Greeks, a lot of the what we would call great philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, Plotinus, Socrates, they all had some notion of a divine. You know, Plato, you have the form of the good. Aristotle, the unmoved mover. Socrates talks about this divine spirit helping him. It seems to be, you know, he was put on charge at a trial for only believing in one God, not many gods, which is a strange charge of atheism.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. Well, for he was corrupting the youth with this idea, I think was the idea, right? That
that's what we university professors do all the time now. At least I try not to. But
and he was indeed corrupting the youth. If you think the survival of the city depends on us continuing to worship Athena, then he was corrupting the youth because he's saying, ah, there's a God beyond all this.
Oh, don't bring up Socrates. I have a love-hate relationship with this guy. He likes to say things like, well, I know that I know nothing. What? Yeah. If you know nothing, you know a little something. He drives me crazy.
Well, I think that, but that's part of the charm of Socrates is he drives people crazy.
Yeah.
That's now you don't like it. You want we do have a call. Shall we go to a call right now? Before we have time to get to one before the break, and we can do the others when we come back. Is that all right with you?
That's fine with me.
All right. Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas is the book from Matt Frad and Dr. Robert Delfino. We start with Carl in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. So happy that you're listening on Guadalupe Radio. Carl, your question for Dr. Delfino.
Doctor, is it not the major problem that we have a moral one because scientists, philosophers, comedians, if they acknowledge that their senses tell them something about the real world, if they acknowledge a natural law or natural right, and they acknowledge some divinity, then they're also acknowledging some obligation. Since they reject that obligation, isn't that the big thing? It doesn't seem like these proofs of Aristotle or Thomas or other Neo-Thomists are that hard. Aren't they? It seems like they're fighting against this for more than just intellectual reasons. What do you think?
That's a great question, Carl. I wish I had a quick, snappy answer. I'll try to give you as quick and snappy an answer as I can. You know, you're bringing up some psychological issues as well, it seems. You mentioned, I think, a moral problem. But listen, I know I have a lot of friends who are agnostic or on the fence, or even some atheists. And it's not always merely that they don't want the obligation. Maybe for some of them. Maybe some of them want their pleasures and they don't want any restrictions that would come along with that. But others are really troubled by the problem of evil. They lost a loved one or maybe a child, God forbid. And it really hurts them inside. They can't reconcile the two. So I would be a little cautious about signifying the moral issue or some kind of, you know, as if that were the only one. I think there's like multiple reasons. And the proofs actually are difficult because Thomist scholars disagree with them all the time. There are Aristotelian Thomists who would say, oh, Delfino, you're such an existentialist Thomist. Shut up. But I, you know, this is my take on the five ways as best as I could be faithful to what I thought Thomas was talking about.
Carl, any response? Carl? Well, no, Carl doesn't. But so you would not be of a mind to say, look, just because these things are available to the right, to the light of human reason, even separated from faith, a person like Aristotle can come to know that there is one God. The fact that they are separated, that they're available to human reason, doesn't mean that they're easily available. Is that am I getting your response correct?
Yeah, no, I think that's correct. I think probably, I mean, I can't really tally this up historically, but if we could talk to God one day, probably very few people come to God actually through the proofs. I think Thomas Merton, my friend told me, perhaps in one of his autobiographical books, he seems to say that. I'm pretty sure it was him. But most people, I think, find God prop, like in my case, through prayer. And since I've kind of, some of my prayer experiences, I felt a presence in other things, and in the Eucharist sometimes. I've had some interesting experiences. And those for me are probably more precious to me than the proofs. The proofs are intellectual, they're indirect, they're somewhat abstract. If you study them a long, hard time, they can be somewhat satisfying, but they're never as satisfying as actually feeling God's love, which I think people really, really want. One of my friends is a skeptic, and he says, all I want is a great feeling. Forget the arguments.
888-318-7884 is our number. If you prefer the spelled version, it's 888-31-TRUTH. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is philosopher Dr. Robert Delfino. And the brand new book, Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas, is now out by Dr. Delfino and his co-host, Matt Frad. Right back with all five ways after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Sharing the gospel with family and friends can be challenging. It's especially hard when they won't even hear you out because of all the mental roadblocks they've built up. This is Carlo Broussard, and in my new book, Prepare the Way, my aim is to help you tackle that essential first step to apologetics and evangelization, getting people to listen with an open mind. Even our best witness can bounce right off folks like these if we don't prepare the way first, breaking down barriers and leaving minds and souls free to encounter the truth. I'll give you evidence and arguments and step-by-step strategies based on asking the right questions to help them overcome their obstacles and make a straight path for the Lord. Order your copy of Prepare the Way today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
God helps those who help themselves. Preach the gospel always. When necessary, use words. We all hear sayings like these, and we assume they come from the Bible, the saints, or famous Christian writers. Nobody can seem to place their origin, but by sheer repetition, they've acquired a halo of truth. In my new book, What the Saints Never Said, I look at over 40 of these well-known sayings and track them back to their original sources. You'll be surprised at what I found. Some are close to what was really said. Many were misattributed or twisted beyond their original meaning, and more than a few of these sayings were simply made up. I hope by setting the record straight, I can make you aware of the theological errors that can lead us away from the faith and offer you authentic quotes from scripture, saints, and scholars that will draw you closer to our faith. Get your copy of What the Saints Never Said by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
When you deal with God, get out of the way.
The incomparable Mother Angelica. She broke the mold of Catholic teaching with her one-of-a-kind perspective. From her spunky spiritual growth talks to her eye-opening scripture study. A nun like none other.
I intend to scare hell out of you.
She was the one, the only, the non-forgettable Mother Angelica. Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio and Television.
Catholic Answers Live. Hey, it's a great time to get signed up for Catholic Answers Magazine, which I honestly can tell you is one of the best Catholic magazines you are ever going to encounter. Tim Ryland, the editor over there, just does a fantastic job. Right now, it's $10 off on a one-year subscription and $20 off on a two-year subscription. Also, they throw in a free digital subscription with that. It's a great gift for Father's Day if your father is a fan of Catholic Answers or a fan of being Catholic. It's just such a great magazine. The articles in there are they're helpful and readable and all that, but they confront some of the biggest challenges to the Catholic faith in the world today. I hope you'll go over there. You just go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and you sign up. Get your $10 off on a one-year subscription, $20 on a two-year subscription. This hour, we're talking with a philosopher and New Yorker. I probably should have led with New Yorker. That is usually the most important thing to know about a person. Dr. Robert Delfino at St. John's University in New York.
Brooklyn, I'm Italian. I moved to Staten Island. That means I'm either going to Jersey next or Pennsylvania.
Do you go down the shore for your summer vacation?
Eh, little bit. I have two sons, a five-year-old and a four-year-old. They love the shore.
That's one of my favorite things, going down the shore. See, we just go to the beach here. That's how we do it in California. But there you go down the shore. Yeah, right. Okay, well. But you got cool boardwalks and stuff, which we don't really have out here except up in Santa
Monica. Yeah, cotton candy.
Yeah, right. Or, you know, just, yeah. Oh, you got all that fried stuff you can get. What is that thing? Fried Oreo cookies you can get down the shore. Down the shore is
not
good
for
you.
Don't make me hungry.
Now that I know about it. So the most important thing to know about you, Dr. Robert Delfino, is that you are a New Yorker, but also you're a philosopher. And in your brand new book that you have co-authored with Matt Frad, a dialogue, the book's called Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of St. Thomas Aquinas. You go through the five ways in a way that is meant to be understandable and also entertaining. And I thought it was both, but I haven't asked you to tell us the five ways. Could you do that before we go back to calls?
Oh, five ways. Wow. Let me give you a little synopsis.
Well, I don't mean,
It took a book to – I know. I'll give you the short version. So the first way is from change. We notice that things change in the world. And to skip all the way to the end, in order to explain the fact that things change in the world, we have to arrive at a cause that's pure actuality. The second way goes with efficient causality, right? We notice a hierarchy of causes in the world. The example I like to use, and that Matt and I use in the book, is that if I have like a gold necklace or something or a gold ring, the gold is efficiently caused by the atoms. The atoms are efficiently caused by the protons partially, and then the protons by quarks. But you just can't keep going on forever. There has to be something that's uncaused. The third way was the one we sketched out in the last segment, so I'm not going to revisit that there, although we can later if you wish. The fourth way is, oh my God, it's a pizza with mozzarella that has exploded. That's the only way I could put it. It's very complex, but it goes something like this. We notice that there's a gradation of beings in reality. So humans are better than dogs because we're intelligent, and dogs are better than plants because, you know, plants are alive, but dogs are alive and can see and hear and smell and all that. So it turns out that everything seems to be approaching something that's being itself. And then for complex reasons I'm not going to get into now, that means that they all are caused in their being, which leads us to a maximal being. And then finally, the fifth way is probably the most difficult of them all as far as complications, because it gets complicated by evolution. But to put it in a nutshell, in the fifth way, we notice that there's order in nature, that things act for an end. Even non-intelligent things do this, like electrons bind to protons to form atoms. And if they don't form atoms and you don't get the periodic table, you're not going to get life forms. So how can they do this if they're not intelligent? Well, turns out, and again, you need more argumentation, but it turns out that they have to have an inner inclination given to them by an intelligent being. Again, complex argument, but that's the nutshell of the five ways.
And it sometimes seems to me like you said, evolution complicates it. But that kind of complication strikes me as it's generally temporary, that there's a point at which a new scientific discovery, we've got to find some way to how does this fit with what we have known before and how these arguments were made before, and it will create nuances and whatnot. But even today, when people look at the universe, they say, well, it doesn't have to have the laws that it has. It doesn't have to have the order that it has. It doesn't have to be able to support us as – and so the –
Actually, I think you've just summed up in some ways the kernel of all the five ways. I mean –
What?
We have – we yeah, you did.
I'm an even better philosopher than you are. I didn't even know it, but I'm a better philosopher than you.
Immense. So think about this though. We have a universe. It couldn't be – like you said, it could just be a lifeless universe. But no, we have a universe with life. But we also have a universe with some forms of consciousness. But then we have a universe with intelligent life that strives for meaning, yearns for love, and all these other things. Why is the universe this rich if it's ultimately just dust or something like that? I think there has to be a cause behind it that's powerful enough to produce such a universe.
Yeah.
And that would be the kernel of the five ways in a nutshell, because they all
and I will tell you
take
the,
some aspect of that.
The objection you'll get is, well, there's an infinite number of universes, or there's all these different universes. It just so happens that we're in this one. It turns out
that just makes the problem worse. It pushes it back. Why are there so many universes?
Right.
And how is there some mechanism to make sure they're all random with respect to the laws and things?
I see it. And also, the fact that there's no science that tells us that there actually are multiple universes, but we'll leave that for another day. David in Helena, Montana, listening on the internet. Thanks for listening, David. Your question for Dr. Robert Delfino.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is just simply that using the logic that you've been speaking about here on tracing it back to, say, you know, a single God, why couldn't there have been one previously existing, three of them that all exist at once, or 20, or two? I personally believe in the one. I mean, I am Catholic, but I'm curious as to why that same logic can't be applied to that, to show multiple deities that just don't interfere with each other. And
right. I got it. No, that's a great question. In fact, if you can send your email to the show producer, I will send you a free copy of the book, because we handle that very objection in Chapter 7, I believe, which is called The Value of Objections. So I'll give it to you in a nutshell. Okay, yeah. How come the first way can't be one god and the second way be a second god, like a Zeus and Apollo and Hera or something like that? Well, it turns out, and we go through this in the book, that the pure actuality of the first way has to be being itself, and that the uncaused cause of the second way has to be being itself, and the necessary per se being of the third way has to be being itself. And then Thomas gives an argument that there can only be one being that is being itself. So there can't be multiple gods. This is an argument for monotheism. Now, if you want, I can get into it now. But okay. So here's how it goes. All right, so being itself. Can you have more than one thing that's being itself? No. Because in order to have two, one must have something the other doesn't have. Otherwise, they would be one and the same being, right? But if one has something the other doesn't have, then it's not being pure being or being itself. It's being plus some property. And therefore, it's not being itself or pure being. So there can only be one being that's being itself. I don't know if that was too fast, but that's the quickest I can do this stuff.
It was for me. How was it, David? Was it too fast for you?
A little bit. I'll have to take a look at the book and read through the Chapter 7 he was speaking of.
Okay. Hang on to give your address to Marie. Marie will be happy to get it from you. 888-318-7884 is our number here. 888-31-TRUTH if you prefer the spelling version. So the five ways, as you say in the book, and you make this very clear in the book, you're not making an exhaustive investigation of the five ways, considering every possible objection and answering every possible objection and all that kind of thing. You're trying to make it so that if I read this book, I have an understanding of the five ways of St. Thomas Aquinas. That's basically correct, yes?
Yeah, the five ways are pretty difficult. If you've looked at some of the footnotes, you'll see I get into the deeper explanations, which get complicated. But the idea for this book is, you know, through the dialogue format, we want to give people a good foundation on which to build. You know, this will probably take you, if you read everything copiously twice, footnotes, everything, you'll probably have an intermediary understanding of the five ways. But you can always take it higher. It gets very complex the more you get into it. But hopefully we inspire people who read the book to want to go a little further if they wish.
So when you're out there, you know, roaming around in the chat rooms on the internet or whatever philosophers do, looking for people to debate, do you?
We drink a lot.
Well, you don't have to share that.
We do.
What are what are the most regular objections? The objections you see the most to Thomas Aquinas's explication of the five ways?
I'm sorry, repeat that last part. What was
so there have to be objections, because there's so many atheists. There have to have objections to Thomas Aquinas' five ways. So what are they? What are the main objections that you see intellectually being made? Because sometimes there's just a dismissal, like, oh, that's medieval thinking and we're modern. Well, that's actually not an answer to anything.
I mean, there's so many types of objections. I mean, what's interesting in the Summa Theologiae, Aquinas only lists two main objections to the existence of God. One is the problem of evil, and that's the more serious one in my opinion, because if you can't resolve the problem of evil, and many people bring this up in bars or whatever, if you can't resolve the problem of evil, then you can't have a good God, right? Only if you can resolve that problem can you have a good God. And most people want there to be a good God, not an evil God. The second problem is that natural causes are sufficient. This is kind of like the Richard Dawkins camp. We don't need God. We can explain all this through evolution and the Big Bang or, you know, quantum vacuum fluctuations. But the problem with that is that's actually not a knockdown argument. Strictly speaking, even if natural causes were sufficient, that doesn't mean there still isn't a God. It just means that we wouldn't be warranted in drawing that inference. But I mean, you know, if I'm drinking – by the way, when I say we drink a lot, I don't mean we get drunk. I mean, you know, philosophers at conferences have a beer or two together and talk. So
I see.
If I'm talking with other philosophers – there's a Catholic way to drink, you know. So.
I do. Anyway. I wear that, yeah.
and Jesus had wine at the Last Supper. But if I'm hanging out with philosophers, then I'll get technical objections. Like the analytic philosophers will say, well, these terms aren't well defined, or Russell would say, you know, something like that. I mean, your average person's objections aren't going to be that technical because they don't really have a firm grasp of what Thomas is doing in those short paragraphs anyway.
Are there are arguments or ways to explain the existence of God apart from Aquinas's five ways that are also valid, or has he hit all five of the valid arguments for God's existence?
That's a great question. I think Peter Kreeft has a book that the title has 20 arguments for God. I'm sure there are more. C.S. Lewis tries, I think, to make a moral argument. And William Lane Craig obviously has his following. I enjoy watching him give debates. But, for example, his understanding of the third way or something similar to it is different than mine. He wants to go back in time, and you can't go back in time infinitely. But Aquinas did not agree with that. He said that you can't prove using natural reason that the world is not eternal. And so this is an important point. Aquinas's proofs work even if the physical universe always existed. It doesn't matter. It's like that earlier example I gave you with the sun. Even if the sun always existed and the light coming out of it always existed, the light would still be dependent on that sun eternally. And so even if the physical universe always existed, it would still be dependent on God.
All right, right. Let's go to Carlos in Frisco, Texas, also listening on 9:10 a.m. Actually, Carlos, have I got you with us, Carlos?
Yes, I'm here.
I'll tell you what, I did it wrong. I looked at the clock wrong. We got to take a quick break. Then will you hold through the break and have your question for Dr. Delfino when we come back?
Sure, no
okay.
problem.
Thanks. Sorry to do that to you. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live right after this.
This is Harry Connick Jr., and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Howdy folks, this is Jimmy Akin, and I want to tell you about a special limited-time offer we've got going right now on subscriptions to our award-winning Catholic Answers magazine. You can sign up today during our annual subscription drive, and not only can you save big bucks off the normal price, we'll also give you a digital subscription to the magazine for free. Subscribe today by calling 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. Sign up for a one-year subscription and we'll give you $10 off the normal price. Better yet, become a two-year subscriber and we'll drop the price by $20. That's a savings of $10 to $20 plus a free digital subscription when you sign up for Catholic Answers Magazine. Act now because this is a limited-time offer. Subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine before our annual subscription drive ends. Phone 818-487-2011 or go to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com today.
Tim Staples, Trent Horn, Cy Kellett, Chris Check, Carlo Broussard. Our on-fire lineup of speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker for your event, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest is philosopher Dr. Robert Delfino, whose brand new book with Matt Frad is called Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. Carlos, I left you hanging before the break. Your question, please, for Dr. Delfino.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate this kind of conversation, and in full disclosure, I am an atheist. I like listening to the show, though.
Well, we like having you listen, Carlos. Thanks.
You're welcome, Carlos.
For me, it's always been about the evidence of supernaturalism. So it sounds like the philosophy is great and the religion is great, and people talk about that till the cows come home. But where's the actual evidence of supernaturalism? If this does indeed exist and people claim it all the time and witness to it and whatnot, I just ask simply, where is the evidence then for this kind of other world or other beings or ghost goblins? God, Jesus, whatever. Where is that evidence, and why isn't it more
obvious,
available
to
all of us.
Okay, Carlos, thanks.
No, that's an excellent question, Carlos. I think there's two things I want to say in my response. The first is, I mean, if you're looking for actual physical evidence, I don't know if you're going the Ghostbuster route with ectoplasm and stuff like that. You know, God's non-physical, so you're not going to get physical evidence. He's going to have to be arrived at through philosophy indirectly from the beings that we experience in life. And the other thing I would say is, you know, some people say to me, well, you know, I pray and I don't get an experience or something like that. But here's the deal. You know, God doesn't manifest everywhere because that would be oppressive, I would say, right? If he showed up at the Senate in the United States every day and looked at the Senate, was like, I don't know if you should vote for that abortion bill. Many of them would be in terror and maybe vote out of fear. God gives us a space for our free will. So only if we really seek him, I would say with all of our heart, maybe we sometimes get an experience of him. But it's just not going to happen so easily. And I think a lot of people, even myself in my early life, gave up too soon. You know, it took me over probably months of prayer before I started to feel a presence and a change in my life. So I would, you know, if you're really interested in finding it, I would say, you know, give it a fair shot, spend a few months in prayer. Maybe, you know, I could suggest some other things, but you have to really seek him with all your heart, I would say.
Carlos?
Yes. And that's pretty much what other Christians have told me. I mean, I was raised in Christianity and I was an agnostic for most of it. And then I had a tour in Bosnia. And that's kind of what did it for me, where I realized you know, these two religious groups are against each other. And I realized, how do they know they're right? Who knows they're right? And then ultimately I decided, well, there's actually no evidence. And that was a long time ago. So yet, I mean, it still sounds like philosophy to me. It still sounds that your version of philosophy arrives at one conclusion. And I spent a lot of time in Asia, several years. And, for example, like a Buddhist philosophy arrives to a different conclusion, and yet no one, it's just not self-evident. We're not having a debate about gravity because it's evident, it's testable, it's verifiable, but yet religions can't actually point to something. And ultimately, I know that's why it's called faith, but I think it bothers me that people say it's truth and this is the truth and you should know it. And that's the only part that kind of gets to me.
Well, listen, two things. One, if you can give the producer of the show your address, I'm also going to send you a free copy of this book. This is Free Copy of the Book Week. And you raised some good questions. I'm not sure if you were raised in a Catholic home or a Protestant home or some other kind of Christianity, but in our tradition in Roman Catholicism, we believe it's not just faith. It's faith and reason, right? If there truly is a God, he gave us the gift of reason to come to know him better, because only by knowing him better can we love him more. And philosophical arguments are not empirical science evidence, but I think they're important. In fact, I've written some articles on how it can't be that only science gives us knowledge, because science itself depends on simpler, more basic forms of knowledge, like sensation and the laws of logic and reasoning and the kinds of things that you get in philosophy, like what is truth that we're trying to find? That's a philosophical question. So if you like, I could send you one of those articles too. I mean, this is a big journey, and I hope you don't give up on it, because it's worth it for you. Even if you conclude one day that there isn't a God, at least you've gone through the journey. That'll be more than most people do, I would say.
Carlos, how's that all sit with you?
No, it's great. I appreciate the dialogue more than anything, and I think that for the listeners it's important to kind of hear it as well. So I want to make room for other callers as well. But thanks for your time.
Thanks, Carlos. If you can hang on, we'll get your address, and then Dr. Delfino, on his own dime, I just need to say that publicly, will send you the book.
For the price of a cost of pizza, you can have
a book. Lot of your life is about pizza, I noticed. You really,
I'm Italian.
Yeah, I know. Let's go to David in Detroit. Next call, David, you are on with Dr. Robert Delfino. Your question about God and the existence of God.
Yes, Dr. Delfino. Just a two-part question about the nature of evil. If God creates man, and if man is capable of evil, does that mean that God creates evil?
I would say no, but let me get to your second question so I can maybe see if they sync up.
The second part of the question is evil necessary for creation to exist?
Okay, so you're asking if God could have created a world where there was no evil in it? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, to me there seems like there's a duality that without evil there'd be nothing for good to be measured against. So there'd be no free will. There'd be no reason to make moral choices.
All right. So let me respond. Good questions, David. Right. So imagine if God created a world where there were planets and there were simple life forms like butterflies, but no intelligent life forms, nothing capable of making free choice. As far as I understand, there wouldn't be any moral evil in that world, right? And you could still rank those beings into how they approach God. So, for example, a stone would be less than a butterfly because the butterfly is alive. I think the problem with evil comes in that God loves us so much, he tries to give us as much as possible on our level of being freedom. Now, it's still a participatory freedom in the sense that if God didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. And actually, this is where it gets complicated. We can only act freely with his help. I can give an analogy about that in a second. But he gave us such as much powerful freedom as he could that now the ball's in our court. And some people are going to misuse that freedom, whether it's out of ignorance or greed or other things. And so I think there's going to be some evil in the world. But it's not God's fault. It's because we have some causality. He didn't make nature impotent. He gave actually beings like us some causal power, which unfortunately leads to these evils. So quickly, the analogy I would give you is take a car. Right? You can drive anywhere you want, but if the car has no gas, you can't go anywhere, right? So there's two levels of causality operating on the same time. There's the gas giving you the ability to drive where you want, and then you turn the wheel. Again, if you run out of gas, you can't go anywhere. So God is giving you actuality, making you exist and allowing you to make these free choices. You can turn the wheel where you want. You can steal that TV or not. But that's on your level of causality. So he's not blameworthy for any of the evil in the world. That's the quick way I would respond to that.
Okay. That seems to satisfy. It's just that when I think of evil, I think of evil in the sense of morality, not evil in the sense of a hurricane killing animals and that sort of thing, but evil in the sense of our moral choices. And like I said before, without evil, there'd be nothing for good to be measured against. Without death, life would have no meaning. It would lose its poignancy. So there has to be a duality in order for purpose, you know, for man to fulfill the purpose that God intended.
Okay, so I also want to give you a free copy of the book. Make sure to give your address. But I think what you're asking about is the chapter 8 on the fourth way. The fourth way is going to talk about a gradation in reality measured against God, and I don't think you need evil to do it. In fact, just on the cuff, I would say that, you know, you can imagine actions that nobody ever did before that would be evil and still know in your mind that they fall away from the good. So they don't always actually have to physically manifest for you to have an understanding. Like God knows things that don't even, you know, that he doesn't partake in. And, well, it gets complicated. But the point is he can know things in a way that they don't have to physically exist for him to know them. So in that sense, you probably don't need the actual physical manifestation of evil to know the good. You can contemplate its opposite to get to that without actually having to create it or something like that.
David?
Yes.
Will you give your address to Marie and Dr. Delfino?
I sure will.
We'll lick a stamp and mail that book out to you.
Hey, I'm mailing the books out.
I know. We're going to email you these these addresses.
I'm already like 45 in the hole, but that's okay.
The book is Does God Exist? A Socratic Dialogue on the Five Ways of Thomas Aquinas. It's out now from En Route Books. Matt and you decided to make this a dialogue to make it – well, there's just something better about a dialogue. I have to say Socrates was right about that in the sense that our mind wants to do that. It wants to go back and forth. It's like we were made to, yes, but what about this? Well, here's the answer. Yeah, but what about this? But here's the answer.
Especially for Italians, man. Galileo wrote some pretty nasty dialogue, if you ever read his famous dialogue with Sagredo that he got in trouble with the church for.
I miss that, but I have known many Italians, so I'm willing to concede the point to you. Dr. Robert Delfino, thanks so much for a really entertaining hour and a very helpful one. Thank you.
All right. It was great being with you. Take care, Si.
You too. I hope we'll do it again. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. Any question that you have on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church is welcome. And you don't have to be Catholic to call. Anybody can call. Thanks, Nick. What am I supposed to say? The control the control room crew. I used to say the booth people, and that was derogatory. Thanks, Nick and Darren and all the control room crew. We'll see you tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.